This is Greg Keeler with Blue Rodeo here, 88.3 FM, WRCT, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
I'm Andrew Saul, Commissioner of Social Security. Beware of telephone scammers pretending to be government employees. Real Social Security employees will never threaten you. Call is threatening you with arrest or other legal action and demanding money are not from us. If you receive a call like this, hang up, do not provide them with any form of payment or information, report the call at oig.ssa.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Welcome to the David Pakman Show. I'm Farron Cousins, and I'm going to be sitting in for David for these next 2 days. We've got a lot to cover today. Of course, we've had more from the January 6th committee. We've had more from the documentary film that is now a central piece of evidence in those hearings. We're going to be talking about all that, plus Marjorie Taylor Greene's week-long meltdown, among many other stories. So let's jump right into it. And I want to start by, of course, talking about the January 6th hearings. And the big takeaway that I have had from all of these hearings we have seen so far, everything that's come out of the committee, and pretty much anything that's been revealed since January 6th of 2021, is that had Donald Trump had a more competent team working for him, I think his coup would have gone a lot differently, and not, of course, in a good way for the United States. So think about this for a moment. One of the things we learned earlier this week was that Mark Meadows was actually offering state officials free MAGA stuff, including autographed MAGA gear, if officials were, you know, willing to toss out their state's 2020 election results. Not exactly a big selling point, right? You know, like, hey, we know it's unconstitutional. We know you're going to have to break the law, but we're going to throw in a free hat. How does that sound, right? Nobody in their right mind is going to take that offer. And then, of course, we have Mike Lindell, who has been spearheading the efforts to overturn the 2020 election results to this very day. Attorneys like Sidney Powell and John Eastman and Rudy Giuliani, all of this cast of just absolute weirdos working to overturn the 2020 election. And all of them, in my opinion, equally incompetent. And that's the thing, though. Had any of these individuals been switched out by somebody that maybe actually knew what they were doing, you know, somebody with a little bit of a brain in their heads, Trump could have succeeded. You know, switch out Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani and substitute in Bill Barr. Suddenly that becomes a lot scarier if the Attorney General of the United States had gone along with this plan. He would have been able to use the power of the DOJ. There would have been enough people inside the DOJ to try to carry out these plans. Think for a second if instead of Mike Lindell going out there and selling this to the public, which hasn't gone very well for him, what if it was Karl Rove instead? Things would have been a lot different. Rove is a master at messaging. He's an expert manipulator, whereas, of course, Mike Lindell just comes across as, you know, bit of an unhinged kind of guy. He's the pillow man, for God's sakes. But you switch out any one of these little weirdos for somebody with even a little bit of competence, a little bit of credibility, suddenly we're looking at a very different scenario in the United States today. And of course, therein lies the bigger problem for the future. Donald Trump, of course, and all other Republicans who might be planning something similar, they've all learned from these mistakes, right? They know the kind of people that they need to put in place. And how do we know that they've learned from this? Well, you need look no further than Steve Bannon. For more than a year now, ever since Trump left office, really, on his podcast, Steve Bannon has been one of the leading cheerleaders telling these MAGA folks out here across the country, go run for office. Go become a poll worker. Run for Secretary of State. Run for governor. Put yourselves in the position to where this, you know, the allegedly stolen 2020 election, which wasn't stolen, but put yourself in the position to where you can do something about it in the future. The framework has been laid down. Okay, it's not in the planning phases. The framework is there now, to a degree. Maybe not to enough of a degree to actually overturn election results, but they're getting close. And they could be a heck of a lot closer after this year's midterms. And it all goes back to learning from their mistakes. They knew, or they know now, they didn't know at the time, but they know now that the people they had running this whole thing were wholly incompetent. So you replace them with more competent individuals. You replace them with people who know how to get things done. You replace them with loyal lapdogs who are not going to tell you no. That, of course, has been one of Trump's driving factors with his endorsements so far in the primary season. That's why he tried so desperately to get Brian Kemp and Brad Raffensperger out of the state of Georgia. Because he wants people that would not tell him no if he were to ask them to break the law. And it's already happening. Again, not to the degree that he would like to see it, or that other Republicans would like to see it, but it is happening. They know where their weak links were in 2021, on January 6th. And more of them, of course, are being exposed by these January 6th hearings. And they're not going to make the same mistake twice. And again, that to me is where the real danger lies. It's great that we're exposing everything that happened. That has to be done. We also have to hold them criminally accountable for it. But we can't, you know, once this is over, wipe our hands and be like, cool, case closed. We've saved democracy. No, that threat is still out there. And that, again, is kind of the underlying theme of these hearings. It's been the underlying theme also, for the record, of the judges overseeing the cases of the Capitol rioters. They have said that plenty of these people, we've seen how they've been essentially brainwashed, and we believe it can happen again. We believe these people are still dangerous. That's why a lot of the judges overseeing these cases have been annoyed when prosecutors, you know, reduce the charges down to misdemeanors. The judges want to put these people in jail because they're afraid it's going to happen again. We're getting reports from the Department of Homeland Security, you know, to expect violence. Another report came out yesterday warning of the increased risk of violence here in the United States as we head into the midterms. And all of it goes back to January 6th, folks. Every bit of it is tied back to that. Because all these people, from Trump down to his supporters and everybody in between, they learned from their mistakes. And it's unlikely that they would be making those same mistakes again. But you know, one person who doesn't ever learn from their mistakes? Jared Kushner. According to a new report from the New York Times, it turns out that Jared Kushner was, in fact, the individual who gave the green light to Alex Holder's documentary crew to come along and film the Trump family starting in September 2020. And, of course, as everybody now knows, this is the documentary footage that has been given over, the raw footage given over to the January 6th committee. They're actually, you know, meeting with Mr. Holder today behind closed doors. He's testifying. He's going through footage with them. They're having a grand old time. But we don't know exactly what's in this footage, except, of course, for a little snippet that the New York Times gave us. Again, Jared Kushner set this up because he thought it would be a good, quote, legacy project for the Trump campaign and the Trump family. And based on the tiny bit of footage that has been viewed by the media, we know that Ivanka Trump told the documentary crew that she actually supported her father's efforts to overturn the election. Now, that's a bit of a different story, isn't it? Because from everything we have seen, from her text messages with Mark Meadows, from her testimony in front of the January 6th committee, she didn't want anything to do with this. She wanted this to be over. I mean, heck, her and Jared actually threw a party on the evening of January 7th, the day after the Capitol riot, threw a big old dinner party, where, according to reports, nobody even brought up what happened the day before. You know, she washed her hands of it, acted like, nope, I was never a part of it, never wanted anything to do with it, never supported it. Bill Barr and I had conversations where we talked about, yeah, this whole thing is stupid. It didn't happen. Trump even came out recently, attacked Bill Barr for allegedly corrupting Ivanka because she was afraid of hurting his feelings. So she just agreed with him that the election wasn't stolen. And now it turns out that he may have been right. Because according to this footage, again, it's been viewed by the New York Times, Ivanka came out in an interview with this documentary crew from Alex Holder and agreed with the attempts to overturn the 2020 election. Now, again, she told the January 6th committee a different story, and she testified to that under oath. So, yikes, right? Almost seems, not saying it is, but I'm saying it seems to me like that may be a little bit of perjury, right? You can't say one thing under oath, but then say something else. One of those things is a lie. And if what you told Congress is a lie, then you may have some serious legal problems on your hands there, Ivanka. But of course, all the committee could really do at that point is issue a criminal referral if they choose to go that route, right? I mean, they may even look at it and say, we'll just point it out to the public how she's a big old liar and a hypocrite and move on, which at this point, you know, who knows what could happen because we don't know what else is in that footage. But that's what we do know so far. It's a tiny little snippet, a tiny little piece of probably thousands of hours of footage. And so far, it looks pretty bad for the Trump family. How bad, you ask? Well, according to new reports, the new evidence that the January 6th committee has received, mostly, of course, through this Alex Holder documentary footage, is so intense and so overwhelming that they have now decided to postpone the remainder of their televised hearing so that they can digest all of this new information, all of this new evidence, they're calling it. Evidence, not just information. This is evidence, folks. The use of that word, of course, legally speaking, implies that there is something there. Something there that the committee needs, something there that the committee can use to possibly go after more leads, go after more people, call more witnesses, find new paths which to investigate. They're not postponing these hearings lightly either. They didn't just look at it and say, oh, okay, yeah, we're going to push all this back. No. They understand how powerful these hearings have been. Right? They know that the public is watching them. They know that it is affecting public opinion. Donald Trump's unfavorability ratings have gone up since these hearings began. More people say that, yes, he was involved. Yes, he should be criminally charged. That poll has basically flipped since these hearings began. So by postponing them, the committee has taken a big risk, but they believe the risk will be worth the reward. And that, of course, is based on the information they have seen thus far from that documentary footage. So it's got to be something good. It's got to be more than just Ivanka contradicting herself, possibly lying under oath to the committee. There's got to be much more than that for them to push these hearings back a couple days, couple weeks. We don't even really know yet. But when they come back, they're going to show us what's in this footage. And I'm expecting some pretty big fireworks. We have to take a quick break. Again, I am Farron Cousins. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire and youtube.com/FarronBalanced. And I'm across all social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at FarronBalanced. This is the David Pakman Show, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire, sitting in for David today and tomorrow. And let's talk a little bit more about the January 6th hearings, but let's go a different approach, right? We've talked about the hearings, we've talked about what's been uncovered, but one thing we need to talk about too is the Republican response. I mean, obviously, we have had some pretty massive revelations from these committee hearings. So massive, in fact, that even some of the folks on Fox News, even Fox News hosts have come out and said this looks really bad for Trump. They have had paid Fox News analysts on the air this week that have said, I believe you could hit Trump with criminal charges, obstruction of Congress to be specific. So even the folks at Fox News, not all of them, not even a majority, but a couple of them, starting to see those cracks form, looking at what's happening and saying, uh-oh, this is pretty bad. So if even Fox News is saying that, you gotta assume the Republicans in Congress, not the ones implicated in the schemes, but the other ones, you know, the regular ones, certainly they've been moved by what we've seen, right? Well, no. Or at least they're pretending that they're not moved by anything that we have seen. In fact, a recent report from The Hill this week kind of highlighted a bunch of different Republican responses to what we've seen so far from the committee. So let me read you some of these responses that these Republican senators, these are all senators, this is what they told reporters from The Hill. First up, we have Senate Minority Leader Whip John Thune. Not Minority Leader, sorry, Senate Minority Whip John Thune. To the degree that there are any people who haven't made up their minds or don't have an opinion one way or the other, maybe something comes out of this that changes that. But it just seems like right now it's mostly rehashing ground. Okay. Remember that phrase, by the way. Senator Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia says, yeah, they're significant, but I'm not sure it's going to change anyone's mind. Okay. Then we have Senator Kevin Cramer from North Dakota, who says, no one's ever said anything to me about it back home. I don't know that I know anybody that's watched it. No one has ever brought it up as an issue. Riddle me this, Senator Cramer. When was the last time you were back in North Dakota where you actually spoke to constituents? Like, not lectured them, not gave a speech, but actually, you know, maybe you walked into a diner. Maybe you did a town hall. But I would love to see evidence of you actually talking to people and them saying, we haven't watched any of it, because I'm willing to bet that hasn't actually happened, has it? Yeah, that just seems like something you probably didn't actually do. Republican Senator Mike Rounds from South Dakota says he watched the first day of the hearings and parts of the second day, and then he said, I think they did a very nice production. They spent their time efficiently, but they didn't tell me anything that I didn't already know. So we're back to that theme, right? Like, oh, this is all old news. Everybody knows all these things that happened. Come on, hit me with the good stuff, they say. Lisa Murkowski, Alaska, said that the panel is, quote, basically saying this is a rehash of everything out there. A rehash. It's the second time we've heard that word from a Republican senator offering a response to what we've learned from these January 6th committee hearings. It's a rehash. It's old news. They're all telling us the same things. We've heard all this before. Play some new material. Well, okay. I first have to say, it almost seems as if all of these responses are somehow coordinated, right? Yeah, I'm fully willing to bet Republicans probably sent out a memo that eventually will make its way public telling Republican senators how to respond to all of this. Downplay, 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 say that, oh, this is nothing we didn't already know. But here's the thing. There is a lot of stuff we didn't already know. There's been a lot of new material. I mean, sure, I've watched these hearings and a lot of it I do say like, yes, okay, I knew that. I knew that. But here's the thing. And this is what these Republican senators have to understand as well. And they do understand. Let's be clear. They understand it. They're pretending they don't understand it. These hearings are not for me. In fact, honestly, these hearings probably aren't for you either. If you're watching this, you're a daily consumer, pretty much, of political news. You're up on the issues. You understand things. You know these things. These hearings aren't for you. These hearings aren't for the Republicans in the Senate. These hearings are for the millions upon millions upon millions of Americans who haven't paid attention to any of this. And again, you as a daily news consumer probably think that that's weird, right? That are there really people like that? Folks, the majority of America doesn't consume any political news on a daily basis. Let me tell the story this way. The very first hearing, my wife was sitting right next to me on the couch as we're watching this. She had no interest in it. And she's a teacher, so the day of the Capitol riot, she wasn't glued to the TV. She's teaching her class. She didn't get to see any of the footage. She wanted to actually leave. She's like, I don't care about this. I don't want to see it. But she ended up glued to the TV that night in shock because she had never seen it. I had seen the footage. I had read stories about the testimony that they were playing. But she hadn't. And she was shocked. Just absolutely floored that all of this took place. Shocked at the beatings that we were seeing these rioters do against police officers. That is who these hearings are for. Those people, the people who, yeah, they understand, yeah, January 6th, I know something happened, it was bad. But they didn't quite understand it because they're not daily political news consumers. And again, and I know that sounds weird, folks, that yes, there are people out there. Most people do not do this on a daily basis. Even Fox News, right, on a good night, they're breaking, what, 3 million viewers in prime time. Seems like a lot, right? It's less than 1% of the population. You add in the people who watch political news on YouTube, MSNBC, CNN, add all that together, maybe, you got 5% of the U.S. population, maybe, consuming daily political news, either from conservative, liberal, or neutral sources, doesn't matter. 90 to 95% of the country out there isn't doing that. They may tune in to the local news in the evenings, you know, find out what's happening in their community, you know, local sports, get the weather for tomorrow, and that's it. They wake up, they shower, they go to work, they come home, they get the kids, they make dinner, they watch a sitcom, they you know, binge some TV shows and they go to bed and they do it all again the next day. Those are the people that these hearings are for. And as far as we can tell, those are the people that these hearings are reaching. So for these Republicans to act like, oh, it's no big deal, there's nothing new, it may not be new to you, but there are millions of Americans who've never seen this and never heard this, and it is having a major impact on how they feel about American politics. Just remains to be seen, of course, how big that impact is going to be next time folks head to the ballot box. And speaking of ballots, we got a new, very interesting poll from the state of New Hampshire this week. According to this new New Hampshire poll for the Republican 2024 presidential primary in the ever-important state of New Hampshire, just because it's an early state, Ron DeSantis, the authoritarian governor here in my state of Florida, is now ahead of Donald Trump. But he's not just ahead. That's not all that's happened here. He hasn't just taken a lead. He has closed a 25-point gap between Trump and DeSantis. DeSantis closed a 25-point gap between the two that existed all the way back in October of 2021. Back then, Trump had 43% of the vote. DeSantis had 18%. Today, DeSantis has 39% and Trump has 37%. Still within the margin of error. So, you know, Trump doesn't need to sound the alarm bells just yet. But this is an early primary state. If DeSantis enters this race and outperforms Trump in these early states, Trump's done. Now, I have said many times on my own programs, DeSantis is far more dangerous than Donald Trump, right? He has all the same horrific policies, but none of the baggage. That makes him far more dangerous. He can endear himself, to the more moderate Republicans out there, the people who may look at Trump and say, no, I'm not going to do that again. They can look at DeSantis and say, oh, but I'll do that. So let me explain the dangers here. Over the last year and a half, everybody here on the left, we've been talking about all these horrific laws that have been passed state by state by state. You know, a ban on books and critical race theory up here, an abortion ban over here, a transgender athlete ban there, transgender affirming care banned over there. All of those things have happened here in Florida, and then some. You know, you've got other states that have done one or two of these things. Florida's the only one that's done all of them. All of them. Not to mention the voter suppression, not to mention the piece of legislation that allows you as a motorist to run down a protester if they're standing in the street and they're in your way and not face any criminal charges. Florida pioneered all this, folks. We have all of the horrible pieces of legislation crammed into one state. On top of that, our economy is in the absolute toilet right now. One of the most unaffordable states to live in now, our housing prices have risen faster than any other state in this country under Ron DeSantis. And he has done all of this, tanked our economy, and of course, passed all this massively oppressive legislation in 3 years. In fact, almost all of it was actually passed within the last 18 months. He did all of this damage, rose to national prominence in 18 months, folks. Just imagine what he could do with 4 years in the White House. Now, personally, I don't know that DeSantis would do well on a Republican debate stage. The guy gets very flustered very easily. He loses his temper. He gets, you know, kind of flustered the way Marco Rubio did back in the 2015 debates, which was hilarious to watch. So I don't know that DeSantis could actually survive that. But if he did, he may be a shoo-in. And he would be very difficult for any Democrat to beat. Definitely difficult for any Republican to beat. Because as horrible as this legislation is, as bad as some of the things he said are, he doesn't have any real scandals, you know? There's no real skeletons in the closet. He's just a bad guy. And unfortunately, a lot of this legislation that we look at as just absolutely repulsive and oppressive, most people do support a lot of it. Not all of it, but a lot of it. That's the worst part. It's not turning off enough people. So DeSantis finally pulling ahead of Trump in the state of New Hampshire, that's bad. It's not bad for, you know, Trump, really. It's bad for the United States. We have to take another break. Again, I am Farron Cousins. Find me on YouTube, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire and youtube.com/FarronBalanced. And I also host the weekly Ring of Fire podcast. You can check that out for free, or you can become a member if you'd like at rofpodcast.com. Again, I'm Farron Cousins, in for David Pakman, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire. Let's get back into some of the news of the week. And one of the more interesting non-January 6th things that have happened this week is that Marjorie Taylor Greene has been suffering basically a week-long meltdown for so very many different reasons. The first, of course, is the fact that it was recently revealed that the individual that has been defacing her transphobic sign outside of her office turns out to be the chief of staff to a Democratic representative. And the Capitol Police were able to find this individual. They put up, you know, security cameras. They got him on camera. They referred him for criminal prosecution, and the DOJ said, yeah, we're not going to go after that. Which, honestly, makes a lot of sense. This individual, sure, I mean, nobody should deface property. Make sure I'm crystal clear on that. Don't do it. But, there's always a but. You know, writing on somebody's sign, like writing Bible verses, putting stickers on it is what they did. You really want to criminally prosecute somebody for that? I mean, you're talking about a misdemeanor offense, you know, the value of which is far less than anything that could even remotely send somebody to jail. So you're mostly talking maybe giving them probation, maybe community service, maybe, again, we're talking about a very minor misdemeanor, probably just a fine. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is, you know, basically crying every day because the DOJ doesn't want to spend thousands of dollars to prosecute somebody for putting a couple stickers on her sign. And of course, she's mad about Triumph the Insult Comic Dog, Colbert's staff, you know, going in and mocking her. And so she was given some time this week on the floor of the House, which I don't know why she was given the time, but she was given the time and she used it to paint herself as the biggest victim that the United States has ever seen. Here it is. Take a look at Marjorie Taylor Greene talking about how she is being viciously attacked on all fronts. Here it is.
I have come here as a freshman member of Congress, and I want to remind everyone, I've never been arrested. I've always paid my taxes. I have not broken the law. I have done nothing wrong. It's the majority party that doesn't like my speech. That's it. So I've been kicked off committees. I've been routinely attacked. I have been lied about. My character has been completely destroyed, not only by people in here, but the media definitely helps them.
Now, that was just a 32-second clip of Representative Greene speaking on the House floor about all these horrible things. She spoke for an hour whining about how mistreated she has been. She spent more than 10 minutes of that hour talking about her poor little signs. And of course, she claims that she was attacked because the member of Congress across the hall put out a, LGBTQ flag. I think it was actually the transgender flag. So that was an attack on her. So she had to fight back by putting her little transphobic sign out there, folks. She's just fighting back. I got no sympathy for Marjorie Taylor Greene. You have not actually been attacked. You've been mocked. You've been ridiculed, sure, but you deserved every second of it. You want to talk about actual attacks? How about we talk about how you have treated David Hogg, the Parkland survivor? How you repeatedly harassed him? You still to this day harass him on Twitter. Luckily, that young man is far more mature than Marjorie Taylor Greene could ever hope to be. How about before you even came into office when you were essentially stalking Representative AOC? And you yelling through her mail slot in her office. There's been reports of you, of course, walking down the hallway, screaming at Democratic members of Congress. You know, we saw you the one time Democrats were doing the press conference on the steps of the Capitol. You came out and you started screaming at them. Those are attacks. And you have the audacity to sit there on the floor of the House of Representatives and whine about a puppet. A puppet. Triumph the Insult Comic Dog is a puppet. And you were triggered by the little puppet. It made you sad. And then, of course, your sign, your poor little sign. Oh, you have to keep sending your staffers over to FedEx to make a new sign. Oh, dear me. How do you even get up in the morning, Marjorie? My goodness. Maybe take yourself down off of that cross for a minute and look in a mirror. You want to know why people are horrible to you, as you say? It's because you get back what you put in. You have done nothing to improve the lives of anyone in this country. You have never shown anyone any kind of basic niceties. You have been mean. You have been a bully. I mean, heck, you put out a video one time. You were in the middle of a workout. You stopped halfway through, pulled out your camera just to do a short video telling Joe Biden he was a piece of, you know, excrement. And then you went back to your workout. That's not even normal behavior. Like, that just goes beyond bullying to where I would say that's almost a symptom, in my opinion. But you can't treat the entire world like garbage and then get mad when people dish it back out to you. If you're going to deliver it, you better learn how to take it. Or, better yet, maybe try being a decent human being for a few minutes each day. See how that works out for you. But honestly, I don't think you have it in you. And speaking of bullies, how about we go over to Lauren Boebert right now? Lauren Boebert this week sent a letter to Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg begging him for $33 million to construct a new bridge in her district. A new bridge that she says is going to help with evacuations. It's going to help with emergency vehicles. Because, you know, Colorado has a lot of wildfires. And Boebert says, look, you got this money from the infrastructure bill. We would love for you to, you know, come and spend this $33 million on a new bridge. People need it. People could die without it. Honestly, all good points, right? But the irony here, of course, is that Lauren Boebert has spent the last year mocking Pete Buttigieg's sexuality. You know, when he took paternity leave, she went on national media and said he's probably learning how to chest feed. You've mocked his husband. You've mocked everything about this man. You have blamed him for things that are not even his fault. And now you have the audacity to look up to him and say, hey, how about $33 million over here for a new bridge for my district so I don't, you know, get creamed in my election? I kind of need to do something for these people because I've done nothing. So would you help me out? Now, I will say, she should not be punished just because she is a horrible person. Rephrase that. Her constituents should not be punished just because they sent a horrible person to Congress. They have the opportunity to right that wrong. Actually, I think it's coming up next week, right? They got that primary. Don Corum, the Republican running against her. You've got Democrats that have switched from being Democrats to registered either independents or Republicans so they can go vote against Lauren Boebert in that primary. Like, there is this massive concerted effort to get this individual out of office. And it's because she's a horrible person. And for the Republicans in her district, it's because she's completely ineffective. That's why she's sending this last-minute pitch to Buttigieg. You know, that's why she's pretending that she hasn't spent the last year basically calling him a horrible person because he's not a straight white man. She needs that $33 million bridge to be able to show her constituents, yes, I may do crazy things sometimes, but hey, look, I delivered for you. And unfortunately, they do need the bridge. And I personally do not believe in abusing political power, you know, just to make an individual pay, you know, just to punish a political rival. That's not okay. You know, just ask Chris Christie in Bridgegate. Something everybody forgot about, a scandal that honestly today probably wouldn't even be a scandal, considering the scandals we see these days. But again, It's the same thing with Marjorie Taylor Greene. You can't spend your whole life just being a horrible person to everybody you come in contact with and then expect them to be nice to you. I mean, this is basic, you know, growing up type stuff. Your mothers, your fathers, anybody, any kind of, you know, adult figure in your life should have taught you this when you were young children. You get back what you put in. I know my mother told me that a million times. She'll still tell me that to this day. And that's not saying that you have to sit there and suffer the slings and arrows of everyone coming after you. You can stand up for yourself, absolutely. But there's a difference between standing up for yourself and being an outright bully, which is what people like Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene have become. And here's another issue. We talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene. We talk about Lauren Boebert. You know, your Matt Gaetzes, your Jim Jordans, all of these little extremists out there serving in Congress today. They're dangerous individuals. And they're individuals who, after this year's midterms, might have even more power, which is even scarier. But right now, according to a report from the New Republic, you have Democratic groups, including, by the way, Nancy Pelosi's Majority Political Action Committee, that are actually out there in this country running ads trying to promote extremist Republican candidates because they somehow think that if we promote the extremist and then they get on the primary or they make it past the primary, get on the general ballot, then, hey, that's going to drive people to the Democrats, right? Because that worked so well in 2016 when the Democratic Party promoted Trump because they thought he'd be the easiest to beat. And for the record, technically, you know, popular vote, Hillary Clinton did beat him. But we don't go by popular vote. We go by Electoral College. So that doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. The problem is these Democratic groups are playing with fire. The problem is the Democrats don't understand that the Republican Party doesn't view these people as extremists. They buy into the whole, oh no, they're just an outsider. The swamp is coming after them because they're out there draining it. Oh, they're the true fighters. They're the ones out there spreading the truth and fighting for us. They're saying the things the other folks are too scared to say. That's how Republicans view these people. That's why they get elected in office in the first place. Yes, every now and then some of them are like, hey, we were duped. We're not making that mistake again. See also Madison Cawthorn. But we had to have Madison Cawthorn in Congress before the people who voted for him realized how bad he was. And we could be looking at a similar situation in these areas where the Democrats are promoting the extremist candidates. It's a stupid strategy. Let's be honest. Let's call it what it is. It's stupid. It's something that hasn't worked for the Democrats in the past. And of course, it ignores the fact that most Republicans actually like what these people have to say. They support these policies. Only 21% of Republicans in recent polling said they believe Biden legitimately won the election. Only 20% of them. They believe the craziness. So maybe the best strategy is not to promote these people, but to remind the voters that these extremists aren't living in a little place that we like to call reality. We got to take another quick break. Again, I'm Farron Cousins. Find me on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire and youtube.com/FarronBalanced. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at FarronBalanced. Sitting in for David Pakman. We'll be right back with more from The David Pakman Show. Welcome back to The David Pakman Show. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire, sitting in for David today and tomorrow. Well, we also have to talk, you know, we've talked a lot about Republican extremists. We've talked January 6th, Donald Trump, all of that. We got to get to some issues here, folks. And of course, one of the biggest issues facing Americans today is inflation. You know, whether it's gas prices or goods, services, everything out there, inflation is absolutely crippling the United States economy. And according to a new report from the Roosevelt Institute, a lot of this inflation, if you want to call it that, is actually rooted in nothing more than corporate greed. Now, that's not to say that inflation is not happening right now at a staggering and alarming rate. It is. But it's happening all over the world, not just here in the United States. This is not a U.S. problem. This is a global supply issue. But here in the United States, we do have something a little bit unique. We have what is being called now greedflation. And that greedflation is corporations, of course, jacking up prices beyond what inflation is forcing them to pay and passing that on to consumers. It's a very simple scam. And to be honest, corporations, many CEOs, executives, they've actually admitted to doing this in interviews over the past year. They have said, on the record, that times of high inflation are the perfect time for companies to raise their prices anyway. One, because they don't get blamed for it, but two, inflation eventually goes away. You know, sometimes it lasts a little longer, you know, but eventually the prices will go back down. And when people start seeing the price tags go back down, they get happy. They're like, oh boy, it's over. And then eventually the price will settle somewhere that will be more than what it was before the period of inflation, but lower than what it was with inflation. So consumers think they win. But that difference between the pre-inflation price and the post-inflation price, that is the corporate price gouging. And again, this new report from the Roosevelt Institute says that corporate price gouging right now, based on profits, based on what they're paying these corporations with inflation and then passing on to consumers, is the worst level it has been in the United States since the 1950s. So it's been roughly 70 years. Most people alive today have never seen corporate price gouging as bad as it is. And of course, this was just for the year 2021, because we don't have final numbers from 2022 because we're only halfway through the year. So this report was only looking at last year when inflation and price gouging was not as bad as it has been so far this year. If you want to know a good example, look at Tyson Foods. Tyson Foods recently released, you know, their quarterly report. In their quarterly report, they showed that inflation had caused their costs to go up. I'm just going to make up numbers because I don't remember exactly, but I do remember the percentages, so trust me. Let's say their costs went up $1.5 billion, but the prices they raised for consumers wasn't $1.5 billion, it was $2 billion. So there's a $500 million gap in there that is nothing more than corporate greed, raising prices simply for the fact that they can. And again, those weren't the exact numbers, but it was the correct percentages. There was a 25% increase. So what we're looking at is a time when the United States, more than ever, needs a windfall profit tax on these corporations, whether it's the oil industry, whether it's the grocery stores, manufacturers, car manufacturers, doesn't matter. A windfall profits tax could put an end to this corporate price gouging that is crushing Americans every time they go shopping, doesn't matter what they go shopping for. And believe it or not, this corporate windfall profit tax is now supported by a majority of American citizens. A majority of them want this windfall profits tax. It's a simple solution. It's a simple solution to a growing problem that affects the wallets of everybody in this country, rich and poor alike. It obviously affects the poor a lot more than it affects the rich, but everybody's paying higher prices. The windfall profits tax could put an end to that. We just have to have legislators with the courage to actually do this. And unfortunately, we do not have enough of them. Instead, we get ideas from Biden, like coming out this week, like, oh, what about a gas tax holiday? Cool, you're going to save the average American family $3.60 a week. Those are the numbers, folks. $3.60 a week is what you would probably end up saving on average, the average family, actually, if you fill up your tank once a week and you got a 20-gallon tank. That $3.60 isn't going to change your life at all. Honestly, it's not even going to help you. I'm sorry, but it's not. You can't even buy a gallon of milk with that because of inflation and corporate price gouging. So that's a bad idea, especially because that money is actually used to fund infrastructure. And hey, we're already having trouble spending our infrastructure bill money because of inflation. So all those infrastructure projects that we were promised, they've been put on hold because the prices are so dang high. We're just getting screwed every which way you look at it. And all of it comes right back to that issue of corporate greed. But don't worry, it's not just major corporations that are guilty of greed here in the United States. Congress has a very serious problem with using their insider knowledge to buy and sell stocks. We have seen the reports, you know, Business Insider earlier this year, or maybe even early last year, whatever it was, 64 members of Congress in the last 2 years have violated the Stock Act. Almost 200 of their staffers have also violated the Stock Act. And of course, these individuals have information. They've got budget information. They know where money's going to be spent before it gets spent. And they can use this information to buy stocks. They can use it to sell stocks. And a majority of Americans, 70% of them to be exact, say they want a ban on congressional stock trading. 50% of Republicans and 45% of Democrats say they're actually going to be more likely to vote for a candidate if they support a ban on politicians trading stocks. I personally, you may think it's a little extreme, I want to go further than just banning them buying and selling stocks. I don't think they should be allowed to own them. Sorry. Again, that's just me. You can disagree. That's fine. Doesn't matter. Doesn't bother me. But you're choosing a life of public service. You've got to give those things up. They made Jimmy Carter sell his peanut farm. Now, if he had to sell his peanut farm, I don't think it's too far-fetched to say that members of Congress should have to sell their Raytheon stock. Not a blind trust. I want it banned. They can't own it at all. But I would also settle, if this is the best case scenario, with a ban on them buying and selling it. And so would, of course, 70% of the American public. And the biggest problem is this Stock Act that all these Congress people keep violating, Democrats and Republicans alike. It's a bipartisan issue. You know what the penalty is for violating it? $200 fine. If the fine is even, you know, put in place. Sometimes they waive the fine. So you could trade $50,000 worth of stock. You could buy $50,000, you know, profit 10, 20, 30%, whatever it is. You can make $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 off of it, and the only penalty you have is a $200 fine for violating the Stock Act. At that point, that's not a fine. That's just a fee for doing business. Listen, that's all the time we have for today's show. We've got some great stuff coming up in today's bonus show, including a Republican who has been removed from office for killing a man. I'm Farron Cousins. Find me at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire, youtube.com/FarronBalanced. Thank you for watching, and of course, stay tuned for the book.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Folks, glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet, because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Ah.
Pose from The Faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
This decision isn't just reckless, it's reprehensible. It's not what New Yorkers want. And we should have the right of determination of what we want to do in terms of our gun laws in our state.
In a 6-3 ruling, the Supreme Court strikes down a century-old New York law that limited the carrying of concealed handguns outside the home. 5 other states have similar laws that are now in jeopardy. California, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, and New Jersey. We'll get an update from Slate writer Mark Joseph Stern, who says Clarence Thomas's maximalist Second Amendment ruling is a nightmare for gun control. Then the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the Capitol reveals new details about Donald Trump's efforts to pressure the Justice Department to subvert the election.
I want to make sure we don't gloss this over. Just say it was corrupt and leave the rest to us. The president wanted the top Justice Department officials to declare that the election was corrupt, even though, as he knew, there was absolutely no evidence to support that statement.
Republican Congressmember Adam Kinzinger led the questioning of former top Justice Department officials like Trump's former acting Deputy Attorney General, Richard Donahue.
I said, Mr. President, within 24, 48, 72 hours, you could have hundreds and hundreds of resignations of the leadership of your entire Justice Department because of your actions. What's that going to say about you?
We'll bring you the explosive highlights from the hearing. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. Senate's approved a bipartisan gun safety bill by a vote of 65-33. The vote comes just weeks after the mass shootings in Buffalo, New York, and Uvalde, Texas, that killed more than 30 people altogether. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer praised the bill.
This is not a cure-all for all the ways gun violence affects our nation, but it is a long overdue step in the right direction. Passing this gun safety bill is truly significant. And it's going to save lives.
Measures in the bill include expanded background checks for individuals under the age of 21 and financial incentives for states to pass red flag laws. The Senate bill, however, does not include a number of gun control initiatives that were included in a recent bill approved by House Democrats, which aimed to ban the sale of large capacity magazines and raise the minimum age to purchase an assault weapon from 18 to 21. In both the Buffalo and Uvalde massacres, the gunman was 18 years old. The Senate vote came just hours after the U.S. Supreme Court struck down a New York law that limited the carrying of concealed handguns outside the home. The court's ruling was 6-3. 5 other states have similar laws that are now in jeopardy: California, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, and New Jersey. In the majority opinion, Justice Clarence Thomas wrote the Second Amendment, quote, protects an individual's right to carry a handgun for self-defense outside the home, unquote. The ruling is seen as a major setback for gun control efforts. In his dissent, retiring Justice Stephen Breyer blasted the majority opinion, writing, "That will make it harder for states to address the dangers of gun violence." We'll have more on the ruling after headlines.